So good afternoon, everybody. Thanks for taking time out of your lunchtime to come to our session. I'm going to try to lay a little bit of the background about this particular project and things like the clearinghouse that have come out of it. And I'm going to go fairly quickly so that we can get to the speakers who are going to talk about the actual clearinghouse as well as the way that the two fields or broad sectors, built environment and public health, are taking advantage of things like the built environment clearinghouse. So first, I have no relationships to disclose. And again, I'm going to do a little bit of the historical background, the trends that drove us to this place, and some of the solutions that hopefully will come out of the session from some of the other speakers. The nature of public health threats, as many of you are familiar with, as pointed out by Dr. Frieden with his pyramid and other frameworks, is changing. We're moving from a world where infectious disease was the cause of most morbidity and mortality to things that are much more chronic, like injuries, long-term disability, and chronic diseases related to obesity, for instance. And so that's changing the nature of the demands on the workforces, and also the nature of which workforces need to be engaged in order to have a successful intervention. So as the public health workforce shrinks for a variety of reasons, as well as it ages and a new and younger public health workforce comes in, we're going to need to expand the traditional definition of public health workforce to, as Surgeon General Lushniak says, he's going to deputize all of the urban planners, the transportation engineers, and architects into the public health service. We need to cross-train traditional and non-traditional workers in a common language, and the clearinghouse is an attempt to do that. As an urban planner who's worked at CDC for 20-plus years now, I can tell you that my first 6 months, I wandered around CDC saying to myself, it sounds like they're speaking English, but I have no idea what these people are saying. And the story I tell my students is that the most often heard phrase when I first got there was morbidity and mortality, and I said to myself, okay, mortality, I can get that. But why are we studying depressing people? And this was before Google, and so I had to ask around, and they're like, no, not morbid, morbidity. I'm like, oh, okay, what is that? Illness. So what you're saying is it means illness and death. Why don't we just say illness and death? No, we need our own special language. So that's what many of the people that are coming into this new joint field discover, is that they know what TOD is and they don't know what morbidity is, or they know what morbidity is, but they have no idea what complete streets means. And these sectors include housing, transportation, urban planning, and so forth. And as I mentioned, Dr. Frieden, my boss at CDC, has said that the context for the factors that affect health are changing in the last 30 to 50 years, and that the broad base of this pyramid is the place where the most impact is potentially available, and you can see that safe and healthy housing and transportation systems are included in those factors at the base. Quickly, the things that are really urgent health threats that I think we're going to need this cross-sectoral workforce to address are obesity, the physical inactivity of our society, and in addition, for those people who are trying to be physically active, the fact that many of our environments are unsafe for that physical activity. The health outcomes that drives are diabetes, and it's not just the current numbers of diabetes. 26 million is a hugely scary number. It's the almost 80 million people who are currently teetering on the edge of converting to full diabetes. And those people below the line, those are the ones that supportive built environments might actually prevent them from ever developing the condition in the first place. And again, as I say, even if you desire and you try to be physically active, in our current environments in many cities and suburban areas, it's not safe to do it, and that's why many youth no longer walk to school. Even the ones who live enough in proximity to their school, parents don't feel like they can do it safely, so they don't. And that's not necessarily a fear that's not a founded fear, because you can see that among 0 to 19, the death rates from unintentional injury for transportation-related deaths is bigger than all of the other ones combined. And all of this, the motor vehicle transportation decision making, has a huge puts a huge burden, both financially and health burden, on the country. And you can see from these numbers that it is not small by any means. Mobile source air pollution is in most places between a third and a half of the air pollution that most people are exposed to. And this all adds up. You've got the cost of overweight and obesity, the cost of air pollution from traffic, and the cost of traffic crashes that adds to the healthcare burden that we currently have in this country to a significant amount in the hundreds of billions every year. And as I mentioned, it's not just that we need to recruit new people into the sort of broader public health workforce because those people have expertise as we need. The public health workforce composition is changing. There are fewer and fewer people entering the traditional public health workforce every year. And those of us who've been around a while, many of us are choosing to retire. And so people aren't coming in the front end of the pipeline as fast as they're going out the other side. So taking that as the challenge that we're faced with, that we have new threats and expanding threats, and that we have a workforce, a traditional workforce, that isn't necessarily big enough or trained in the right things or given the correct authorities, the question then in the public health model is, but do we have evidence base that if we had more people and different people, that we know what we could do about it? And assuming that most of you are from the public health world, you're probably familiar with the Task Force for Community Preventive Services, and specifically the Guide to Community Preventive Services, which in public health I learned years ago, this is kind of the Bible. This is the strongest evidence base that exists in a variety of fields. And since I entered the public health field in the early 90s, a number of new recommendations have been added to the task force's recommendations that relate to the built environment, specifically community scale, that's a more macro level, as well as street scale, urban design and land use policies have been proved to increase physical activity, and more on the, and both the community scale, i.e. parks and sidewalks, so those are the enhanced access to places for physical activity, but also the design of stairways inside buildings has been shown to increase physical activity, and the point of decision prompts that point out to people where the stairways are have also been shown. And in housing, tenant-based rental assistance programs that de-densify poverty have been shown to decrease crime and violence, which then gets at some of those issues that parents feel about not letting their kids be out either walking to school or playing in the park because they feel like their neighborhoods aren't safe. So we have evidence-based interventions that need both public health and non-traditional built environment professionals engaged in order to work. This was all then driven home by the National Prevention Strategy's recommendations, and there are a number of them that I encourage you to take a look at. But since we're talking about a bridge in workforce today, I figured I'd pull the one out that seemed most appropriate, and that is that a prevention-oriented society can be supported by integrating health and health equity into planning and decision-making across a number of sectors, but that requires you to have a skilled, cross-trained, and diverse workforce to implement those. The White House picked up on these same themes when it started addressing childhood obesity, and this is the report that launched the First Lady's Let's Move campaign, and it also talked about things like health impact assessment and local decision-making processes that support and promote best practices. And without the workforce and the common language and pulling the wagon in the same direction, things like this won't come to pass. And throughout all those recommendations, impact assessment and looking at decision-making have been called out by the IOM, by the task force, by the White House, and so forth. And given that, the IOM decided to put together a report about health impact assessment. And this gets at the very nature of health in all policies. the decisions that we make that affect health aren't all the decisions that we think of as health decisions, like where we're going to put the hospital or how many doctors we have in the community. The decisions that affect health and also involve, do we have sidewalks, do we not have sidewalks, what's the speed limit, are there safe routes to school programs around our schools. And those decisions are ones that need to be informed by health impact assessment. One of the things that really was a seminal moment in my mind in this evolution that we're talking about was that there are a number of academies that are a part of the National Academies of Science that we look to for our best science. Two of them are the Institute of Medicine and the Transportation Research Board. They had never co-authored a report before this one. And so the first thing that they decided to do jointly was look at the built environment and physical activity. And basically they said there was plenty of evidence to indicate that the built environment does affect physical activity. What they also said was that the specific nature of how you would go about effectively doing that wasn't as well known as it needed to be, and that we needed to be doing joint research to understand the more detailed nature of the changes that were called for. And so the things that we can do as the workforce at every level, federal, state, and local, are affect things like school siting. Because if their schools aren't within a walkable distance, then whether the distance is safe is a moot point. You're not going to send your kid on a 7-mile hike each way every day to school. So if it's not, if the schools aren't sited close enough, you don't even have to worry about whether there's a safety issue or not. But there is a number of guidelines and best practices that can be tapped at the state and local level to make sure that if schools are sited appropriately, that there are safe routes to and from houses to schools. At a more macro level of a city, New York has really taken a lead in creating active community environments, active transportation systems, and they have a number of guidelines and tools that are available for anybody to download and to replicate, because they feel like the people who've worked on this particular project feel like there's no reason for other people to necessarily reinvent the wheel that they've already invented, and I encourage you to go take a look at these guidelines. Complete streets is another concept, and that basically is that the streetscape, which includes the sidewalks, should be something that is designed for every potential transportation use and for every potential transportation user. Young children, older adults, people with mobility impairments, bicyclists, not just the automobile, and only a complete street that serves all those needs and all those people safely and efficiently really is what we need in our communities. And the last thing I wanted to point out is that there are a number of rating systems now that are being created. And this is one example that's more at the macro level, city and county level rating. But there are rating systems and assessment tools for individual blocks, whole neighborhoods, all the way up to the city and county level. And this system that didn't start out to be about health, by the way, it started out kind of in the same vein as LEED, the U.S. Green Building Council, kind of a green and energy efficient model, rapidly realized that you didn't have sustainable communities if you didn't have healthy communities. The point that was made early on was if they were worried about climate change, which they were, as they were designing the system, the really negative consequences of climate change seemed to have a 50 to 70 year time horizon before the really negative ones occur. The negative consequences of the diabetes epidemic that's emerging have a 20 to 30 year time frame. So it's possible that if we don't get healthy, we may not have to worry about climate change because people may be dying in the streets. And that was not something they considered sustainable. So they have baked health into this system as much as environmental and energy efficiency. So I think I'll leave questions until the end, right? So I'll turn this now over to Dr. Botchway.